Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Please put your hands together for the Bechdel cast with your host Caitlin Durante and Jamie Loftus.
Bechdel cast, questions asked, movies have women in them. All their discussions, just boyfriends and husbands, do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi.
What's up?
Woo. Welcome to the show that you came to. My name is Jamie.
Hello, I'm Caitlin. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for coming. Yeah, the show. Oh, man. This is the first night of our tour.
That's right.
We're so excited to be here. Where to begin?
Well, this is we're in my home state of Pennsylvania.
Yup.
Philadelphia, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Baby.
Wait, can we say that?
You can do whatever you want, Jamie.
Can we say that your family's here?
Oh, yeah. My mom and sister are here.
Yeah.
So, a tepid response about that.
I was just thinking our first live episode we ever did was in my home state of Massachusetts, ever heard of it, and my mom positively ruined the episode by getting extremely horny for our guests. So,
that was one of my favorite episodes.
I was permanently traumatized by it. Yeah. Interesting. My mom absolutely, and then I don't even know how deep we can get into it, but our guest for a brief time, this is over a year ago, was considering pursuing my mom.
Yes.
He's like, your mom's so nice. She added me on Facebook and she has a wild view of what should be capitalized and what shouldn't be.
He DM'd me and was like, hey, should I ask out Jamie's mom?
There is. And you said?
I said, your body, your choice.
See, I was hoping you would say hard no, but I gave my mom the heads up and she was like, well, let's see what he says. Sorry, I have to notice, we've got people right in the front row drinking here. The mic's hard.
Hell yeah.
We got mic's hard. Oh my, wait, what flavor are you rocking? Sorry.
Margarita?
Wait. There's a margarita.
What?
Are you kidding me? Oh, thank you so much. Okay. I was waiting for you.
Wow.
Gifted. Wow, for me? Unbelievable. Guys, thank you. It's been a really long year. We all had to, the hardest part of the year for everybody, of course, was weathering the Mike's Hard Lemonade Deadpool 2 crossover. That was just absolutely difficult for us to get through. Because when you think about it, it really is a perfect match. Really, every person buying a Mike's Hard Lemonade in earnest is seeing Deadpool 2 multiple times.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway,
what is this podcast about?
By a round of applause, who has seen the movie we're covering tonight, Waiting to Exhale?
Yeah!
Hell yeah!
Oh yeah, we love when people do homework!
Out of curiosity, by a round of applause, who has not seen the movie? Okay.
All right. Does anyone here think that they were coming to see an episode about Mulholland Drive, Benny Jazz? There. Cool, cool, cool. Well, very different episode, and we can't wait to have the discussion with you.
We originally had on our ticket link that we were covering Mulholland Drive, and then we changed it. And
ooh, it's salty. Mike's Hard Lemonade, I think we've said, what haven't we said about it? But what is our podcast?
What is it? As you know, we talk about the portrayal of women in movies and mm-hmm. how it's historically very bad.
Yeah.
And we use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point to initiate a larger conversation about women in film. Hey, you guys probably know, but for our listeners at home who maybe this is their first episode they're tuning into.
Yeah. Well, let's see if they can say it.
Yeah. So, ready?
Are you ready? Caitlin, our fans are stupid. They're dumb. I don't know what to do. No, I thought they were smart, but I was wrong.
I have a feeling that everyone said the exact right thing, but just at different paces. So it,
you have a higher faith in their. So
just to recap, what you all said very correctly
in unison, very clearly.
Bechdel test requires that a movie has two named female-identifying characters who speak to each other about something other than a man.
Yes. For example, really quick. Hey, yes. Caitlin.
Hey, Jamie.
I'm having a little contest with myself for Tor to keep myself entertained, which is what is the worst outfit I can come up with? I'm starting out pretty strong. Mm-hmm. Got period panties on. And then a sheer Coachella skirt over it. And then, of course, rocking the Team Dry Scabs merch up top. Right before we bring out our guests, I just wanted to take a quick take the temp where Philly is at on the Dry Scabs, Wet Scabs debate. Are we all familiar with what this is? If you don't know what the debate is, if Beetlejuice, the character, was coming, is he coming wet scabs or is he coming dry scabs? Now, we know... where I'm a DSA member, I say dry scabs. But just a quick clap it up if you're feeling like it's a wet scab situation. Ooh. Oh. Physically painful. Okay, and dry scabs? This is going to be a great show.
Clap it up if you're as disgusted by that conversation as I am.
Caitlin, you're splitting the vote. This is why this happened.
You're right.
This is why this happened. You're splitting a friendly vote.
Jill Stein over here.
God. Okay. Let's bring out our guest.
Let's do it.
We're so excited to have her.
So excited. She is the Associated Press national writer on race and ethnicity, and she's worked at the Washington Post and Los Angeles Times. Give it up for Erin Haynes Wack.
Welcome, Erin.
You know, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a delight. Absolute pleasure. So as we said, the movie we're talking about today is Waiting to Exhale.
Yes.
Some of you have seen it. Others of you are here.
That's totally my fault. Whitney Houston is not in Mulholland Drive.
So. There. Although, what if?
Absolutely.
Something worth considering. What is your history with Waiting to Exhale, Erin?
Okay, so Waiting to Exhale came out the year that I graduated from high school, which I don't mind sharing with you guys because melanin. and these women were obviously total icons of the culture at that time. I mean, Whitney Houston, Angela Bassett, Loretta Devine, Layla Rashawn, you know, these were women who you thought were your cool auntie or your cooler older cousin. So you just immediately loved the movie for that because these people felt immediately familiar to you. But also, I mean, Terry McMillan was such a big part of Black culture at that time as an author. So, you know, I think for a lot of reasons, this movie kind of immediately resonated with Black women of all ages. And it was something that rewatching it as a grown woman, I definitely have different feelings about. But at that time,
the story of our podcast,
right, exactly. No, this definitely fits into that genre. Yeah. WTF, a generation later.
Caitlin, what's your history?
I hadn't seen this movie. I was familiar with the GIF moment. Does everyone know what I'm talking about? Where Angela Bassett's walking away from the burning car and she does a motion.
Raise your hand if you've ever used that GIF. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Some of y'all are lying.
The context of the GIF is way more satisfying.
So much more satisfying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So much more.
So I hadn't seen it, but I'm very excited to talk about it.
Same.
I, in keeping with being myself, saw it this morning. Mm. And because I have never seen a movie, if you go to our iTunes reviews, it's a common complaint. I'd seen scenes from this movie before. I'd seen the GIF.
Of course.
I'm familiar with the GIF.
Had you used the GIF?
I had used the GIF.
Right.
Yes. And then now I feel even stronger about the GIF than
Absolutely.
I did when I first started using it.
You have a new appreciation for that GIF.
I would just use search term Angela Carr.
That'll get you what you need, though.
And that will get you the GIF, but it will not get you the context.
No. No.
But if you look up Angela Carr, the GIF generally comes up.
Yes.
I saw it today. I've seen scenes of it over the years. It's one of my aunt's favorite movies.
Yes. Shout out to your auntie.
Yeah. Shall I do the recap of the movie?
Yes.
Wow, everyone loves a recap.
Oh my goodness. And this will especially be helpful for the people who thought that we were going to talk about
Waiting
for Mulholland Drive. Yeah.
So it's New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
The end.
You're doing great.
That's actually the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
New Year's
Full
Eve.
Full circle, like Rent.
Yeah. Mm.
I believe we're in Phoenix, Arizona.
We are. Yeah, where apparently a lot more black people live than I thought.
Right?
That was my first thought watching that movie. I was like, woo, it's a lot of black people living in Phoenix. I'm from Atlanta. I did not know. Phoenix is apparently the Atlanta of the Southwest. According to this film, it was news to me. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So we meet four friends. Savannah Jackson, that's Whitney Houston's character. Bernadine Harris is Angela Bassett. Robin Stokes is Layla. How do you say her
Rashawn.
Last name? Rashawn. And Gloria Matthews is Loretta Devine. They are all holding their breath, or some might say, waiting to exhale.
Oh, God.
Basically.
Lots of flourishes in the recap today.
I know. I wrote one out just, to be.
Is that in your doc?
It's in my doc. There's color coding.
There is.
As
always. Yes, it's 6 pages, mm-hmm. 8-point font.
Yeah. So they're basically waiting until they find the right man. Mm-hmm. And the story centers around different relationships between men that are in their lives. So Savannah, she's moving to
Whitney Houston.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to be switching a lot back and forth between character names and actors in this one.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
So the first guy in her life is Lionel. Mm. She meets him at a New Year's Eve party.
One of many slow dance scenes.
Yeah.
And she says the title to the movie, sort of, which I was very excited about.
Yeah, that was kind of corny.
But
I mean, Whitney Houston, acting was not what she was known for.
No.
Mm. Can we say that? She could sing. She can sing, though. She can sing, though. Her contribution to the soundtrack, which we will get to later, mm-hmm. was very important.
Yes. Yeah. Here's what I'll say about Whitney Houston as an actress. She can sing.
Exactly. Exactly.
An amazing thing.
I think she did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back to Lionel.
Yeah, so Lionel, they have sex in a really funny sex scene. But he turns out to be like a cheap, like freeloader dude. So she's like, get out of here. On to the next one. Meanwhile, we've got Bernadine.
Yeah.
She is married to this guy
Angela
named John.
Bassett.
Yes.
Yes.
So she's married to this guy named John, and he leaves her and her two kids.
On New Year's Eve.
On New Year's Eve.
Yeah. I know. Oh, yeah. Gasp. Yes. Gasp it up. It was shocking.
He comes in the room and she's like not feeling going to the New Year's Eve party.
Right.
And he's like, hey, do you want to not go to the party? And she's like, oh, thank God. He's like, because I'm going with the woman I'm leaving you for. I was like, oh my God.
Happy New Year.
Can you like they got a sitter and everything, and then he's like, hold on, actually, this marriage is over.
Right.
Insane.
So then that's followed by a sequence where she takes all of his expensive things and then burns them. And his car.
Yeah. I mean, really, where is her Oscar, folks? Where is Angela Bassett's Oscar for this? Like, I mean, nobody does Despair and Rage like Angela Bassett. And, you know, this needs to be, is there like an honorary Oscar that can be given to her?
Can we like
now?
Yeah, retroactively.
We need to go back. This needs to be recognized by someone.
It's crazy because a lesser actress, it would have just sounded like like spewing exposition, which is what she's doing. Yeah. She's like, I went to grad school.
Hey, speaking.
Grad school. She delivered just like one of her many like epic lines in the movie. Like, I was your white woman for 11 years. And I'm like, yes, burn it all. Burn it all. It was amazing. It was amazing. I think that was the first time that I really learned what satisfaction really was. What gratification could really feel like. I felt it in that moment. Even at that young age, I recognized.
Yeah. And then she lights the cigarette.
Oh, my God.
And then lights the car on fire and then the gif. And you're just like, yeah, yes. This is the best thing ever.
I felt what she felt in that moment. And then the fire department comes and is like, she's like, yeah, it's trash.
Yeah, it's
That
slams
was trash.
The door in
I
his
was
face.
Burning trash.
That fireman was so baffled, but he also looked horny. Like, he was like...
And he knew not to take it further as well. He knew.
Yeah.
He was like, all right, ma'am. All right. Don't do that again.
He was like, I'm not going to get in the line of fire of whatever's happening.
P.S. Door's already slammed in your face. It's over.
Yep.
You're not.
He's done.
Nothing's happening.
He got his SAG card. Get out of there.
Oh,
you're done.
Oh, my God. Yes.
So, yeah, she burns all his stuff. And then she's like trying to get money from him or something. My font is really small, so I can't read it.
Well, there's like a big divorce. Like there.
That yard sale?
The yards where she sells all this stuff for $1.
A dollar?
17-year-old me thought, I mean, I was really appreciative of the petty of the dollar yard sale. Grown ass me is like, this was not a wise financial choice, boo. You didn't know what you were going to get in that divorce. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you may not have a pot to piss in. Like, why are you selling his stuff for $1? I mean, that car alone.
She burns everything and then sells the skis for $1?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, bad choice.
Poor choices. But again, this whole movie is about poor judgment. I recognize that now, you guys. I recognize it
the
now.
The pettiness in this movie is very strong. But in a very satisfying way.
Black girl tragic, as I like to say.
So then she's dealing with like the grief of this divorce for the rest of the movie. And then meanwhile, we've got Robin.
I feel like she would have been an Instagram thought like in 2018. Mm-hmm. Like for just based on her behavior, some of her choices, I feel like she would have been on Instagram. Who agrees with this? Doing the most. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Going live.
Just wondering.
Yeah.
Her first guy is Michael, who she works with. And she is not attracted to him.
She called him a human submarine sandwich.
She fat shames him a lot.
She really did.
Yeah. It's not okay.
She came down hard on him. But also we know that she makes it very clear. She is physically repulsed by him.
Well, she did. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then he undermines her at work, so she fires him. So good for her.
Right.
Guess what? If you're bad at sex, you're fired.
Right. Right.
But this time, women are doing it.
And then we meet Gloria. She is a single mother of a teenage Donald Faison.
Hello. Shout out to you, Scrubs, Clueless. Mm-hmm. Anyone? Mm-hmm.
Josie
Anyone?
And the Pussycats.
Anyone?
Hello.
True. Yes.
Pre-braces, too.
Pre-braces.
And you can hear it in the line reads.
True.
Bless his heart.
Had a bad haircut. All of that. All of that.
It's a very convincing teenager.
But why? His mom was a hairdresser. Like, why did he have a bad haircut? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just questions that I'm asking now. I did not.
I mean, he's just a rebel. He's like, my hair's going to look like shit.
I guess.
And then her whole thing is she hasn't had sex in a long time. So she's extremely horny.
Yes.
Then
a moment of silence.
I'm loving your takeaways, your synopses of these characters. This is hilarious.
That was a very strange moment.
I think it was my fault, but I don't know. So then it's time for more Savannah's men troubles.
God. A lot of vignettes. A lot of fade outs.
A lot of bad wigs.
A lot of bad wigs.
Her next guy.
Also noticed that in retrospect, the bad wigs. We just want to put that out there.
Oh,
Whitney
yeah.
didn't have some good wigs. But she could sing. Never forget.
She could sing. The one thing in this movie she does not do.
So Whitney Houston starts seeing Kenneth, who I call Mr. Allstate, because
right.
he's the guy from the Allstate commercials.
You cannot look at him now without thinking about that. It's so true. Aww. She was not in good hands at all. At all.
Right. Because he is married and he has a small child and they used to date, but then he got married and then...
I like to
think wasn't he married when they were dating the first time?
I don't know.
I thought so.
Right. Yeah, that was why they couldn't work out before because, you know, the little matter of his wife and child, you know, that was complicating things. Not that that bothered her, Savannah's mother, in the least.
Yeah. You know? She's like, you need a man. All women do.
I don't want you to be alone. Because I can't take care of you.
Like me.
Right.
Like oh, God.
Me. Yes, exactly.
And that storyline concludes with her dumping him and being like, I'm too good for you. Bye forever. And then...
And then calling her mom and being like, stop telling me to get married. Right. Click.
It also stop, co-signing my side chick behavior. Like, I'm a reformed side chick now. I'm leaving that life. It's like... Okay, girl. That was supposed to be one of the many moments where you're like, yes, but I'm just really like, it's about damn time. I was much more disgusted with her. I was much more disgusted with this movie in general, actually, rewatching it than I was before. Because it was like, oh, yeah, girl, yes, dump him. It's like, no, you really should not even be in the picture.
Yeah.
By the way.
How did we get here?
Did
we get here?
Hey, Jamie, what do you say we take a real quick break and then we'll come back for more?
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. and with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Something rare about this movie that we don't get with movies with women in them ever is we know what everyone's job is,
yeah,
which is great.
Yes.
However, the way they show people doing their jobs is very like, you know, it's sort of like in a science movie where they're like, chemicals, right? We know that Whitney Houston is a TV producer because right. She stands in front of screens.
Right. Uh-huh. You don't get to actually see her producing.
No.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, she is there.
And Layla Rahsaan is at her office looking boss like.
Insurance.
Yeah.
Is it Allstate, really? It's probably Allstate.
Probably.
She stands in front of a chart at one point and we're like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. She could have been doing anything.
She could have been doing
And then Gloria's doing hair.
That mm-hmm. I mean, we see her doing her job and we know she's good at it. Everyone else is sort of just like she's there, so probably it's fine.
But I will say, I mean, even the little bit that they did show, like to me as a young woman, like that telegraphed to me like that these were successful professional Black women, right? Yeah. And so like this is kind of what I envision like Black women in their 30s being like, right? Except for the like not getting married part, because like I didn't really see that for my future. But like I did see, yes, these women have jobs, like they have their shit together, like they are independent, whatever, you know. And so I'm thinking, yes, this is what this is supposed to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's like it is so genuinely hard to find movies where you see women doing their jobs at all.
Yeah.
So this movie goes above and beyond in that regard.
Right. Sadly, even these crumbs.
We've got a chart. We've got a chart, mm-hmm. and that is progress. That's good.
And then Bernadine has an MBA. And again, speaking of grad school, didn't get to get it in the first time, but I do have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University. I hate to bring it up.
Yes. Yes. You're using that right now.
Yeah. Thank you.
I That's did. Being put to use.
Okay, so Bernadine's the rest. I'll go through this really quickly. Her next guy is Herbert, who she like spends one night with. He's another married guy. She keeps
right.
sleeping
Infidelity
in beds.
Infidelity is okay in this movie. Why
what was
this so
on
okay?
In Phoenix,
and she is the one who burned all of her ex-husband stuff for cheating.
Correct.
On.
So not, yes,
it's a little. It sends mixed messages, Bernadine.
Sure. Sure.
And then the final guy is James, played by Wesley Snipes.
Right.
Yeah.
No. Don't clap for him.
And then, no.
Because again, looking back, he was supposed to be like the one good guy in this movie. Well, that's not true. Gregory Hines too. But like, he was supposed to be the good guy in the movie after like so many of these trash men and like.
But he's not.
He's totally not, right? He's hitting on you, and you got a dying wife at the crib.
Yeah.
No. That was baffling to me.
No, and you're like, oh, but no.
But no.
No. No. No, reject that impulse. This man is hitting on her with it. Like, feel bad for the dying spouse. Don't feel bad for Wesley Snipes.
Right.
For context for the Wesley Snipes character, he shows up at a, you know, out of nowhere, which is how all men in this movie show up.
Sure.
They're just suddenly in frame and taking control of the scene. It's very exciting. But he shows up and he's talking to Angela Bassett and he is like, yeah, so crazy. My wife is dying. And,
right.
And she's like, oh, do you want to have sex?
Right.
And he's like, yeah. And then they go upstairs and he's like, just so you know, I love my dying wife.
P.S. She's white.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, but she's still dying. She's
like, I think the more important part here is that she's dying.
I was like, she's dying right now?
Right. Possibly, I don't know, and I don't care because I'm up in here in this hotel room with you. Let's make tonight beautiful.
And so Angela Bassett.
No!
And then Angela Bassett's like, okay, so she's dying. Let's split the difference and spoon while clothed.
No, because she was still like, what do you want to do?
That is true.
She was going to go along. She was going to go with that if he had been like, all right. But then, yeah, they end up spooning with all their, like, yeah.
With all their clothes on. And we're supposed to be like, aww.
But again, like, while they're spooning, old girl is back home dying.
We've got a lady in chemo, and he's right. Spooning Angela Bassett. Everyone's worst fear.
Romantic. Yeah.
And then her story ends. The divorce proceedings go through. She wins a shit ton of money and...
And property,
yes.
A lot of stuff, yeah.
Never forget.
Then we've got Rob and her... One of her guys is Michael and...
The submarine sandwich.
Submarine sandwich.
Oh, right. Sorry.
And then Troy. Move on to Troy. Cool. Michael T. Williamson. You know, he is an unsung hero of this movie.
He's great.
Those of you who have seen it know how hilarious he was from start to finish because... I mean, she was really trying to make that work because that's not anybody that you want to be your boyfriend for real. Like, but she was at that point, you know, she's getting over Michael. Troy comes into the picture and it's like.
Could it get worse? Yes.
Yeah, I think he does crack.
But like, let's talk about that because let's talk about the I mean, like she rolls up on him doing a line and then. Robin is on the phone with Savannah, a.k.a. Whitney Houston, having a conversation about somebody being a crackhead. Whitney Houston is trying to girl, he's a crackhead. It's like, well, you would know. I mean, wow. Again, I totally missed that the first time around, but like.
Time was not kind to that.
Whitney
scene.
Houston is like, crack is whack, basically, to Robin. And I'm like, yes. It's hilarious. It is hilarious. She knew all the crack behavior. Girl, he stole your wallet. Like, she knew. She was speaking from experience. And I wonder how she was really handling those scenes, like, looking back. Because that was hilarious. Yes. That was hilarious. But that wasn't even the funniest part. The funniest part was, you know, the when he shows up drunk for the barbecue.
Vest. And throws fruit at her.
Throws fruit at Layla Rashan, who throws it back with perfect aim, by the way.
Yeah,
yes. I wish that had not been out of frame, because I would have loved to seen him get hit in the back of the head with an orange, but... Leather wearing in the summertime. I mean, that was a classic scene. Because why did he have on that leather vest in Phoenix? Why did he even own leather in Phoenix? Like, I don't know.
And he was in theory, was picking her up because he decided, he didn't ask her. He's like, you're going to meet my mom and my sister today. I'm showing up. I'm drunk and on crack, maybe.
Possibly, probably.
And I'm wearing a leather vest. Get outside. She's like, no.
I'm good. I'm going to stay right here on this porch.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And that is like kind of the closest we get for that character of like standing up for herself. But it's like, but that sort of no, just seems like a given. That's
she stands up for herself later, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Because her story ends with her old boyfriend, Russell, comes back into the picture. And he's all like, I don't want to leave my wife either. All these men are married to someone else.
Well, they're going to leave, but it's just not the right time. It's never the right time.
My kid's birthday. Right. Lot of those.
Totally the right time for me to come over, you know, slide through on the late night, but it's not the right time for me to leave.
And then she dumps him once and for all, but she's pregnant with his baby.
Oh, no.
Oops.
And again, you want to cheer this moment. She's standing up for herself. He's like, coming over. She's like, no, you can't come in. He's like, what you reading? Oh, childhood choices. What's that? He's like backing out the door and she's like, yeah, it's yours and I'm keeping it. Again, we can't root for the side chick, people. We cannot root for her. Good for you. You're having a baby. You're not going to get another abortion, like whatever. But like, yeah, you were the mistress.
Yeah.
This is not, I mean, yeah, I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling the happy ending here for you.
Mm-mm. There's a lot of, I mean, it just seems like sort of the movie aims to do this flip of like the three women at the beginning of the movie who are like, I need a man. End up not with a man. And then the one woman, Gloria, who's like, I'm raising my son and I'm giving to everyone, ends up with a man. So they just sort of like flip the original intention. But in cases like that, it's like, oh, but they're not thinking too hard about it. They're
well, Angela Bassett's going to get a man just as soon as white woman breast cancer dies.
Right, because
her man is on the way.
She has a really sinister, like, big sports clock in her kitchen.
I didn't even, like,
countdown to death. There's...
Right, because like, after you sent that letter, it was like, yeah, keep me posted. Yeah.
She's like, you know, I'll just, here's my email. Just invite me to the funeral as sort of a...
Oh, my God.
A subtweet to when I can... It's brutal. It's brutal.
Right. And Jamie, as you mentioned, Gloria, she's the only one who ends up with the man.
Right.
Her neighbor, Marvin. Although before that, she has a brief interaction with her son's dad, David. Who is like, I used to be bi, but now I'm gay, which
he said he changed his mind.
Right.
Like, oh my God, 1995, get it together.
Right.
But you know what, though? That part was interesting, too, because again, like, thinking back to like that era, you had like a lot of conversation in Black culture about like the down low phenomenon of Black men. And so it was like, oh, this dude is supposed to like, you know, be. Not typical, but like exemplary of this phenomenon. Like she didn't have any idea, and then you like he ends up coming out to her, you know, because she's trying to keep something going, and he's like, oh, actually, I should let you know this is where I'm at now, and it's like,
right,
mm-hmm. Okay, and then like at the well, we haven't gotten to the birthday party yet, but like, you know, they're like lamenting that you know the good men are gay, you know, or you know unavailable,
right?
Yeah.
That whole scene plays very weird. Where
what the birthday scene?
The birthday scene plays very weird.
The weird
coming out.
Yeah,
scene.
Yeah.
That whole scene, you're just like, I see what you're going for, and I respect it. However, everything is weird. Yeah. They're
like, he don't want you.
They even do like he's wearing earrings. Like they're subtweeting the fuck out of you in this scene.
And he also had on an auntie wig, but I mean, actually, that's probably like his real hair, but it was cut like an auntie wig.
But it's like all this stuff. And then he comes out to her in a very 1995 white guy adaptation of a story way. And he's like, I was bi. I changed my mind. Sorry. And her original reaction to that is, oh, if you're not attracted to me, like, just tell me. And like she was taking it personally and thought that he was just trying to get out of the situation. He's like, no, I'm gay and I'm leaving. And then he leaves, and that's sort of it.
Yeah.
It's very. And then Donald Faison's reaction to that is even weirder.
We can get into in a moment, but
it's bad.
To be clear, we recognize that sexuality is fluid and maybe.
Of
you
course.
Know, but yeah, the way it's handled in this movie is like, oh, that's not your intention. But that's that's not what you were trying to
it's
say.
It's just a mess they treat sexuality in this movie.
But then she ends up with Marvin.
Yes.
Who seems really nice.
He did seem nice. I mean, Gregory Hines he did not seem like the type of person that should have been, you know, messing over one of these ladies. Like,
and his wife is dead.
His wife is definitely dead. So he's available, right? And Gloria made sure she got the 411 on him like right away.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then plied him with soul food and sandwiches.
Yeah.
You know, until
and
he
works.
Finally. Yeah, exactly. That shit worked.
Because women
works.
Be making food
exactly.
all the time.
Women be nurturing this.
And you may have noticed that the way I framed all of these storylines was around the men, because the women do not end up on screen together that much. They're four best friends, but I think they're only on screen together for like 20-ish minutes total.
That may be true, actually. I mean, they're at the club together,
mm-hmm.
and they're having the birthday party.
Yeah.
There's like that one random gratuitous scene of them coming out of church together.
Yep. That's about a 10-second scene. Two of them are at a carnival at one point,
talking about abortion.
They were on a Ferris wheel talking about abortion.
Oh, no, that was two carnival scenes. I'm thinking about the other one where they're like drunk at that park or wherever they were. I don't know. I'm like...
There is a Ferris wheel scene.
There is.
Yeah,
there
that's
is.
That's fun.
Oh, the other one is they're at an ostrich race?
Yes! I mean, again, they're in Phoenix. Like, what are they doing?
But they're
what are they doing?
They're at an ostrich race, and then Angela Bassett opens the scene by saying, "This is boring." And then she's like, "By the way, I helped someone cheat on their wife last night. How do you feel about it?"
Right.
Such a weird scene. The most jarring part of that scene for me is saying ostrich racing is boring. I was like, you've been given a gift.
Exactly.
What are you?
So that's pretty much the story of the movie.
The extent of their...
At the very end, it's New Year's Eve again, presumably the following year, but who knows how much time has passed.
Who knows?
And yes,
too much.
It's 6 years later. We don't know.
Now she's pregnant. It was like totally
Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're like, oh, we don't need men. And then...
We've got a car and friends.
First of all, no. Again, watching this now, my first thought in that last scene... Why the fuck aren't they at Angela Bassett's house in Acapulco?
Right?
Okay. If I am going to be spending New Year's with you bitches, I want to be in Acapulco.
Because where are they? They're in a lot. They're in a vacant lot.
They're nowhere.
Lot.
They're burning nowhere. Stuff again.
They're still in Phoenix. Still in Phoenix is where they are. P.S. Gloria's got a man now. I'm shocked that she ditched Marvin to be with these chicks.
Right.
Invite
just
Marvin. Donald Faison's in Spain. That's a whole
thing. He's definitely gone. Mm-hmm.
Donald Faison's like, why can't I go to Spain? And I love saying, like, homophobic slurs. That's his whole character. Oh, and also, at one point, Gloria busts in on him getting his dick sucked. Very jarring. No one... Donald Faison pre-braces getting sucked off is not something anyone's ready for. It's just not.
I wasn't.
I was like,
I was as shocked as Gloria.
It was, I know. I was like, get out of her, out of his shed. Where does he live?
He's living in the pool house. He's in the pool house, I guess.
I was like, that's a very nice shed that he's getting sucked off in, I guess. I don't know.
As one does. God.
What is Phoenix like? Like, I don't know.
No thanks.
So Aaron, you have said that, you know, you grew up with this movie. It was, you know, an iconic movie for you. But now as an adult rewatching this in today's era, tell us about how it's different for you, or how just your thoughts on how Black women are represented.
I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that just the underrepresentation, you still don't see, you know, these kind of relationships really portrayed in this way on the big screen. I mean, like, think about how excited people were about Girls Trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and that movie, you know, is coming, you know, 30 years later. So people recognize that, you know, because we don't really get this, like, any kind of representation like this, and especially because these women were the stars that they were at the time, like, you really were so excited for this movie. But, like, in retrospect, yeah, these are not people that I really would want to root for. I mean, except for Gloria. Like, I did not feel myself rooting for any of them and their storylines this time around. It was just kind of like, I literally am looking at each one of them like, girl, get it together. Like, wake up. No. Like no. I was literally just like yelling at the screen at multiple points because I was just like, wanted them to be making better choices. Mm-hmm. And also just, I was not as willing to put as much blame on some of these men as I would have been, like, when I was young, thinking, oh, these are great women, like, you know, what is wrong with these men? It's like, no, actually, they are making poor choices. Like, these are not people. Yeah, you shouldn't be with any of these dudes, but also, like, why do you keep picking these trash people?
Right. Well, the big thing for me about this movie is I was coming in expecting it to be a movie about Black female friendship. And I was like,
exactly.
I can't wait to, like, just, like, see them interact on screen. And then the whole movie is totally framed. They're totally defined by, like, the men who they're with or who they want to be with. Every storyline is about the men in their lives. Mm-hmm. And I was like, boring.
Right.
And that's, like, the most frustrating thing about, I mean, seeing, like, a movie that's built around female friendship being sort of thrown away in, like, this really lazy writing kind of way of, like, well, they're female friends, so we can use that as a conduit to talk about how they consider the men in their lives to be, like, what defines them.
Absolutely. Like, by the time you get to the birthday, like, the living room birthday scene, like, that, you wish that that could have been, like, most of the movie. Because, like, you have, like, every friend that you need is in that room, right? Like, somebody that's going to talk you down from bad choices. Somebody that's actually maybe, if you are going to make bad choices, ready to go along with that shit. Like, right. Let's go. You know, when Bernadine is drunk and ready to call and cuss John out, you know, Robin is right there.
Right.
Like, dial that number, you know. And, like, you know, that one friend that's kind of, like, neutral and just kind of hanging back to kind of see what happens. Like, that is – and they go through, like, the range of emotions, like, in that one night, as girls do when they get together and open the Moe, okay? I mean, they're having a good time. They're crying. Mm-hmm. You know, they're talking about men. But they're also just kind of talking about their lives. And it's like, yes, more of this, please.
And it's more fun to watch than the 900 scenes of one of the characters deciding to – be a side chick to someone else's
Correct.
Marriage, because that is what most of the movie is.
Or having bad sex with somebody who is single, but
those scenes are really funny though. Those
they are
bad sex scenes.
Those are like female gaze scenes where, like, there's that scene with Michael where you see the fucking prop flop sweat on his he's character acting the shit out of that scene.
He's
like, I love sex. And you're like, oh my God, he's so much.
I wonder how things worked out for him after that for a while. Probably no bueno.
I bet he was in, like,
well, he ends up at the club with another woman.
Oh no, I mean in real life.
Oh I see.
Let's look him up.
Right, exactly.
I feel like he has 200 movie credits.
But also Lionel. I mean, that sex scene was pretty terrible, too.
Right.
And comical.
Yeah. Whitney Houston's face in that is
She's
priceless.
She's like,
because he's making, like,
he's, like,
scary.
Growling.
Yeah,
he's
like,
And she's like, no thanks.
No.
She's like, I don't want to go to the zoo or something.
She's like, I guess I'm the zookeeper.
Yeah.
I do appreciate how, like, sex positive this movie is, though. That's a line from the movie.
True.
Yeah, very sex positive, because they're like, at some point, every character is like, I'm so horny. And the other women are like, yeah, and go get some. Like, they are very supportive, never, like, slut shaming, anything like that.
Yeah.
Well, with that, let's take a quick break, shall we?
Let's shall.
And we'll be right back.
All right.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
There's that scene with Gloria and the neighbor. The scene where she meets the neighbor is such a horny scene.
Gosh.
It's so crazy.
She's looking at him like a sandwich.
I knew this was an adapted work, but there are some scenes where you can very much feel it because they're like having loud monologues to themselves in front of the other character. You're like, he is right there. Where she's walking away and it's like after there's a vibe and then she's going back home and then she's like, I hope he's not watching me walk away. And then turns around and is like, he's totally watching. I was like, he's 4 feet away from you.
Right. Saunters off across the street.
Speaking of monologues, can we talk about Bernadine's monologue as she's like throwing away and burning all of John's stuff?
It was epic.
It was so epic. She's touching on stuff like the man, like his expectations of me is that I was going to like be the background to his foreground.
Yes. I mean, she's talking about that. She's talking about how he didn't want the kids to go to a certain school because he didn't want the improper influence.
Right.
She's talking about how she wanted to start a business, but he told her no. I mean, yeah, she was airing a lot of shit on her way to that garage. Like, with those back and forth trips.
It's fully earned. Yeah, yeah. Where she even, like, you see his organized closet, you're like, oh no.
Yes.
Things are about to be mismatched.
And just how quickly it happened too, though. I mean, because like it starts off like she's in the bed, right? She's miserable. She's crying. Gets up, makes a pot of coffee, and hits that closet. And 15 minutes, puts the kids on the bus. And 15 minutes later, it's a bonfire, baby, in the driveway. And you're just like, yeah. And then she's on the couch watching cartoons.
And then later on, there's the scene where her husband has just had the kids for a weekend and he brings them back and they...
Oh my God, her facial expression.
So good.
Again, nobody does rage like Angela Bassett. Like the death stare that she is giving this dude when he is dropping those kids off and how she just immediately, just on a dime, goes from that to like being a loving mom to these kids as they're coming home. And clearly they're like siding with her and love her so much. And they're just like, dad is trash. All right, then I'm back. But like, but also another Angela Bassett classic is when she busts up in that office when he clears out
the bank
accounts.
Oh, yes, I do want to talk about that.
That is a scene,
Because she comes in, she's like yelling, and then the first thing she does is slap
Kathleen,
his mistress, across the face.
Yes. I felt rewarded in that moment. It was very rewarding.
See,
Where is that gift? Like, that should be... That is underused, that is a gift that is out there. And if not, if anybody in here has those kind of skills or capabilities, please go ahead and get that going on Twitter so that I can begin to use that
moment a little troubling because I think we talked about this on... I have...
As a white woman or for some other reason? Why was it troubling for you?
Yeah, that's why. No, race completely aside... We talked about this on our Cruel Intentions episode, where women who get wronged by a man by, you know, them cheating on them, there's a tendency, because women are so generally pitted against each other in society, for the one who was cheated on to blame the other woman. And then a lot of the men kind of like get off scot-free or they're not held as accountable. So, I mean, I understand her anger and frustration.
I thought that went up in my head as well. But then it's like she's just as mad, if not angrier,
at her husband.
That's totally true.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, this woman was, she was in between her and the husband.
And it seems
like... If she had stepped out of the way, we may not even have been there.
Sure.
She should have just stepped to the right.
I mean...
Like, if we're being honest, like, if it had been, if it would not have been me, but had it been me, I would have just slid on over. Because, I mean, you see the tornado coming
you. Oh, yeah.
And you just are sitting here. You stand up and start to speak? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Well, and then this, but when she, I mean, God, when she finally does light into him, I mean, she doesn't hit him. But, I mean, her unleashing on him when he's talking, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm thinking about coming to pick up my kids. And she's like, oh, God, you guys know what she says. She's like, if you have them anywhere near that tramp, bitch. And she leans into that with everything that she has. Mm-hmm. Again, where's her Oscar? I just, it was so good.
It seems like her rage is sort of distributed equal, like against everyone who's wronging her.
I agree.
And let me be clear. Let me be clear. There are many white women who should be slapped by black women. For any sure. woman who voted for Trump, basically.
Oh, it's tricky. I mean, and that comes up again later in the Wesley Snipes scene where it's like a reveal to Angela Bassett that. Because he says, it's just like, I don't know, I'm interested in how you, because it's all over the place. If he's like, I'm a civil rights lawyer, and
which,
I'm,
by the way, is catnip for like a professional black woman. You throw that out there and it's like, I'm sorry, what? I love you. I'm sorry, what?
But then they go upstairs and he's like, remember that dying wife I told you about? She's white. And then Angela Bassett's like,
that hurts like hell.
Yeah, it's weird the way they, and I read that in the book that is not how that scene goes, and that's not how that story goes.
Right.
In the book, the Wesley Snipes character wants to divorce his wife, who is white in the book.
His wife.
Sorry. He wants to divorce his dying white wife, and like it wasn't working before she got sick, and then she got sick, and then he's like, well, I've got to, for lack of a better phrase, ride this out. And so in the, that is, I'm so sorry.
We do need a better phrase. Damn.
But and that sort of, I think, is a more effective story choice to be like, the marriage is over, and it was over. But in this version, he's like, I love her deeply. And then Angela, which makes Angela Bassett's choice seem bizarre. Or like her being like, let's fuck anyways.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, clearly she was already cool with one-offs with married dudes. I mean, we saw that.
Well, yeah, we see that too.
In the movie.
Which is crazy because she's so mad at all, like, her husband and that white woman.
It is crazy.
Like, cheated on her.
I don't know. It's confusing.
It is confusing.
And a lot of this is, I mean, I would hazard to guess adaptation issues from the book to the movie.
But maybe somebody, whoever, I'm forgetting who wrote the screenplay.
Oh, a white guy, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Maybe makes it more endearing.
It was the author of the book, Terry.
Oh, well,
but
shit,
a white
never
guy,
mind.
But also a white guy.
Because a white guy.
She,
no,
I
mean, of
could
course.
See her. Well, I no, could that's true. See what they ended up coming up with for the movie, though, like in some people's minds, making him more endearing, because at the time, like I said, I mean, I was like, oh, this is so sad. Like, you know, if only they'd met, you know, in another lifetime or whatever. It's like, no, they're meeting in this lifetime and she's dying.
And yeah. And so step out of the.
Why are you even sitting down next to her ordering Hennessy? Why?
Right. Why are you hitting on this woman as your wife actively passes away? I don't know. There is like a bell hooks piece written just a few movies after this movie came out, and bell hooks does not like this movie. she
knew
very much. Yeah, she
knew.
But like you were saying, Erin, before we came out, like she was a full grown,
right?
You know, she wasn't 17,
right?
When this movie, and that's when, like, we talk about all the time, like the movies you see while your brain is still squishy and you're trying to understand the world using the media around you, it shapes your view of the mm-hmm. world. Bell Hooks was formed by the time she saw this.
And she was not having it.
She was not having it. And she writes about in her piece that there was a white guy screenwriter actively involved in giving recommendations on how this should be adapted. And so stuff that changes markedly from the book, like the Wesley Snipes stuff, is like at the suggestion and push of some rando like Hollywood white guy. Mm-hmm. Imagine, you know?
Yeah.
So adaptations are fucked. Show me a good adaptation.
Doubt?
What? Doubt.
That's true. Touché.
But Doubt was, I mean, they just let John Patrick Shanley go for it. Check out John Patrick Shanley's Twitter. It's fucking weird. Oh. He posts a selfie before he goes to bed.
Don't ruin this for me.
He's like, good night. It's like, why do you do that? I don't know. Anyways.
This movie was a box office success.
Yes.
It opened at number one.
Yeah.
And
again, black women were, they were ready for this movie.
Mm-hmm. Was a critical, like, mixed review. Sure. So.
Because Angela Bassett, but also Whitney Houston. She can sing.
Yeah.
She can definitely sing.
Other final thoughts?
Yeah, was there other stuff you wanted to...
I mean, like I said, the only thing that was better than this movie for me at that time was the soundtrack, which frankly still holds up, right? I mean, Babyface, you know, the king of 90s R&B, you know, he produced it, but all of the songs were by black women. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm talking about, obviously, Whitney gets to be on the soundtrack, but I mean, you had Brandy, you had Aretha, Chaka Khan, TLC, I mean, like, and Mary J. Blige. Yes, I mean, it was a soundtrack for the ages, like, for real. And I'm not going to start singing along here right now. We can if you want to, but I mean, like, seriously, like,
let's all go to karaoke after this.
Not exactly. I've done Not Gonna Cry at karaoke before. It's a lot. It's emotional.
The one thing that we didn't quite hit on was Donald Faison's reaction to finding out his father is gay. Like, it is a weird
scene. It was foul.
It is not good.
Yeah, basically what happens is Gloria accidentally outs David. And then she realizes that she's made a mistake.
Right. To be fair, she's shocked because she just saw Donald Faison getting sucked off in a shed.
Pool house.
So
pool house.
You're right.
And then his reaction is extremely bizarre because he uses a series of homophobic slurs.
And then says, it's all the same thing.
Right.
Like, right.
He doesn't understand
totally minimizes
language.
It. And then it's like, well, at least it didn't run in the family.
Remember when you saw me getting sucked off, Mom? Right. It was like, why is this the way this goes?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Then that never gets cleaned up or resolved or whatever. I mean, because, like, that's just
it never
out
really
there.
Gets. He just gets to go to Spain.
Right.
Like, that's how that ends.
Right.
So, I mean, the way this movie deals with queerness is two thumbs down. Is not good.
So, and I would argue that there's a stylist character in Gloria's salon who is queer-coded. Because gay men can only be stylists, as we see in every movie ever.
But I will say, I mean, like, the gay black man who's doing hair is very real. And shout out to all the ones that I've had in my life that have kept me late. I appreciate them. Now, I mean, was he over the top and dramatic? Maybe. But also, do I know some black men doing hair who are like,
oh, sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so maybe, I don't know if they appreciated being seen in this film or not. Obviously, he's not representative of all gay black men.
Sure, absolutely.
So, you know what I mean? So
it's weird because it's like seeing queer characters in this movie, seeing queer characters in movies in 1995 in a way that isn't like they're a punchline is something.
Sure,
it's something in the right direction, but it doesn't go there and it doesn't fully realize those characters.
Because he is like messy and he's the one who like tells Bernadine's business to like the rest of the girls. And you know, it's like,
it's imagine a movie in 1995 is just not perfect.
Right.
My last thing was, I like the scene. This is just a stray thought. I like the scene where Bernadine gets mad and cuts her own hair Gloria won't do it.
Listen.
Oh, baldest woman in charge.
That was a yes. The baldest woman in charge rule holds true.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, when a woman chops her hair off, watch out.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, Mulan.
And get out of the way. Get ready.
She's going to war.
Something's about to go down. Right.
Yeah.
No, for real.
Yeah. All right. I think that, did we do it? Does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
A couple of very brief, like, two-line exchanges.
Yeah, a lot of two-liners in this one.
17-year-old Aaron would have said, absolutely.
Yeah.
Grown-ass Aaron says, I don't know.
Well, let me make a case for it.
Savannah at one point says, "Nice house, Bernadine." Mm-hmm. Bernadine says,
"You know what? You know what, Caitlin? You are really reaching right now. You are really reaching." Okay.
She responds, "At $5, you can have it." Then they talk about John for a few minutes.
Right, because this conversation is happening as her home video footage is playing in the background.
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah.
So that negates that. Next.
True. Robin and Gloria have a brief conversation about manicures and Robin's job.
Because she's yes. like blowing off work to maybe get a manicure.
To please a man, probably.
Right. So. And Gloria was also going to charge her by the finger for that polish. Yeah. So, some friend.
I feel like that one passes. I don't know.
It's one of those movies, though, that, like, however many things we break down, like, the subtext of the whole movie is men. So, it's like, it just gets harder. As the longer we do this podcast, we're just like, the subtext of the world is men, apparently. So, how
welcome
the fuck
to
are
the
we supposed
patriarchy.
To. Yeah. How the fuck are we supposed to pass this damn test?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was even thinking about, like, remember when Savannah calls her mom and, like, her mom is talking about her, like, financial
food
situation?
Stamps, yeah.
I'm reaching.
It's, I mean, I think.
Well, we never learned her name, the mom's name, first name, I don't think.
Do we
so
not?
Maybe that one.
I don't think, I didn't catch.
But also, mama. Like, moms, I think, get a pass on the Bechdel test.
Right.
Mom.
I don't know.
What's her name?
I just.
Mama.
Bernadine and her daughter, who is named Onika,
yes,
talk
yes.
about words.
Yes, they do.
The word freak,
there
specifically.
There you go.
I think this movie does pass the Bechdel test a couple of times. But, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, given the fact that the marketing of this movie was like, four women, like,
yes.
four black women, and this is their friendship, it should pass way more than
sure.
it does. Yeah. So, I mean, it passes, but not as much as it... or any movie with four female leads should.
Right.
Shall we rate on our nipple scale?
Let's do it.
Okay. So in terms of, like, I love that there's a movie that's representative of four strong black women who, yes, do have many lapses in judgment throughout the film.
So many.
But because the movie isn't really, the core of the movie isn't so much about their friendship. It's more about how these women are relating to men and having relationships with men. And even when the women are together, they're almost exclusively talking about men.
Mm-hmm.
So that is disappointing. And there are, like, kind of those brief moments of feminism where, you know, Bernadine's like, I'm tired of, like, not being able to pursue my own thing. I have an MBA, damn it. Like, I want to open a catering business.
Right.
But then she spends the rest of the movie trying to have sex with married men.
Right. Like, they could have showed her focusing on her catering
right.
business.
Right. Yeah. That's where I thought the story was going with her, but, like, that doesn't even come
she's
up
like,
again.
Whose wife is dying?
Like, you're shaking him down for alimony when you could be making that catering business happen.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Hopefully she invests that $1.5 million in that business, so
nope.
one can
I
hope.
Mean.
But, yeah, so representation-wise, because there are so few movies with an all-black cast like this,
mm-hmm.
The fact that it was financially successful, that people got to go see it, is great. But the stories, and while the characters are, like, distinguishable, and, you know, we see representation of successful black women, which is unfortunately a rare thing in mainstream movies, they are entirely framed around the men in their lives and should have been more about their friendship, I think.
Yeah, that success was limited yeah. because they hadn't found love and
right,
marriage.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it, I'll give it a 3 nips. No, well.
That's generous.
Right? I'm wrong, right? 2? Okay. 2.5.
We can crowdsource your opinion.
Y'all see
what
it
are you
now.
Doing?
Y'all see it now.
Mm-hmm. Look, I'm easily influenced. So what I meant to say, I'm going to give it 2.5 nipples. This is my own thinking.
Everyone's.
And I will give 1 to Angela Bassett, 1 to Whitney Houston's singing voice, and
the soundtrack.
Yeah. And my half nipple will go to Gloria and Robin.
Mm.
their friendship nipple. That we barely see.
Erin, what do you say?
Yeah, I'm going to go with two nipples. One for Angela Bassett because, I mean, she was just everything in this movie. Probably the best thing to me about this movie. And then one for Gloria because, again, she's the only one that seems to have, like, a positive, you know, outcome by the end. Yeah. So, yeah, that's all the nipples I have for this movie.
I'll go 2.5, and just to tag on to what everyone is saying, movies that are supposed to be about female friendship that secretly aren't about female friendship and are about the men and how they define their lives are insidious and evil, and don't do that. Come on. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving one to Angela, one to Gloria, and half to that guy's dying wife. Like, give her a fucking break. All right.
Totally.
Erin, thank you so much for being here. Yes. We are so
thanks for having me.
Pleased to have you. Hey,
thank you guys.
Where can we find you online? Where can we find your work?
So I am on Twitter, very easy, at emarvelous. And I am on, all my stories are on apnews.com.
All right, and you can find us on Bechdelcast across all your platforms. Get T-shirts, blah, blah, blah. There's a show coming in. We love you so much.
Give it up for Kate Bamford. Yay! And everyone at Good
Comedy
Theater.
And give it up for yourselves.
Hey, everyone. It's Caitlin. On behalf of Jamie and I, we just wanted to give another shout out to Kate Bamford and everyone at the Good Comedy Theater. Thank you so much for having us there and for letting us do our live show. We had so much fun. And to listeners, if you're ever in Philadelphia, go and check that theater out. It's a great comedy venue with a lot of great shows. Thank you again so much to our guest, Erin Haynes-Wack. She was so awesome and we had so much fun talking to her. And then just the usual stuff, a quick reminder about our West Coast tour. We still have tickets for our San Francisco show on January 20th. We are covering the Breakfast Club. We have tickets to our show in Portland on January 23rd. We are covering Fight Club for that show. And then on January 24th in Seattle, Jamie and I are going to be doing a stand-up show. And tickets to all of those shows are on our website. So if you go to bechdelcast.com and click on the live appearances tab, you'll be able to find all the links to get tickets to those shows. And then also on our website is the link to our merch store, or you could just go to tpublic.com/thebechdelcast, and that's where you'll find all of our t-shirts, our sweatshirts, our stickers and phone cases, mugs. We've got pillows even, whatever your little heart desires. And then be on the lookout for some new designs in the new year. Wow. And then, as always, you can follow us on social media at Bechdelcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes and give us a little 5-star or a 5-nipple rating, because that helps us out a lot. And then we just wanted to say from both of us, thank you so much to you, our listeners, for your ongoing support. It's been a wild year, but, you know, we've really enjoyed communicating with you online and hearing your suggestions for episodes and everything like that. So thanks again, and a happy new year, and may all your new year's wishes come true. All right, bye.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.